Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Joseph Gittler, founder of Lekhet Israel and co-winner of the 2018 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for his work rescuing food and feeding the hungry in Israel. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Two Jewish maven on Israel, Amir Eden. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's Super Bowl Sunday today, as American a holiday as exists these days, I suppose. And as the Patriots and Rams prepare to square off in Atlanta later today, we have to say that the Jewish connections to pro football are limited but significant. Robert Kraft, the longtime owner of the Patriots, is only the second team owner to see his franchise participate in three straight Super Bowls. The Buffalo Bills, led by Jewish head coach Marv Levy, made it to four straight Super Bowls in the early 90s, although they lost each one. And the Patriots' top receiver, Julian Edelman, is as prominent a Jewish player as we've had in many years. Robert Kraft has seen his Patriots reach the Super Bowl 11 times since he bought the team in 1994, and they've won five of those games so far. Kraft was awarded the Genesis Prize this past year, the Israeli million-dollar honor that typically goes to somebody who doesn't need the money. He is a very prominent Jewish philanthropist. The other Jewish connection to the Super Bowl today is that the halftime show is headlined by Maroon 5 and its lead singer, the very Jewish Adam Levine. Since Adam Levine is from Los Angeles, a true Angelino, like me, one might assume he is rooting for the Rams today. Compared to the Jewish connections to, say, the Baseball World Series, I admit it's a little thin. There are a lot more Jewish players in Major League Baseball than the NFL. And they are more prominent generally, but still it's nice to find some Jewish angles on the biggest sporting event in the U.S. On the other side of the world, Israeli politics are certainly of great interest to American Jews, and last week there was an apparently game-changing political debut, perhaps of Super Bowl-sized dramatic impact. Benny Gantz, the chief of staff of the IDF from 2011 to 2015 and founder of a new political party called Israel Resilience, announced his candidacy to succeed Bibi Netanyahu as prime minister. Gantz has been known as the silent one, so no one really knew much about his political leanings, but he changed that with an extensive speech this past week in Tel Aviv. He is widely viewed as a serious threat to Netanyahu's long tenure as Israel's leader, especially with Bibi facing multiple corruption inquiries and potential indictments. Gantz has positioned himself as both very strong on security, as befits a general who led the last Gaza war, and also willing to seek peace with the Palestinians and other Arabs, as well as being socially more liberal than Netanyahu. It will be an interesting Israeli election campaign over the next couple of months, and we will watch it closely. This Shabbat, in addition to awarding the Kohan Foundation Memorial Awards here at Congregation Beit Simcha in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, we will also rededicate a Czech memorial scroll for use at our synagogue. It will be a true celebration. And so to play us in on a festive note on this fine morning, on the subject of serving God with joy, here's the original Diaspora Yeshiva band at Carnegie Hall, playing and singing Ivdu et Hashem Besimcha, Serve God with Joy.
Shem besimcha, Yidu es Hashem.
Russia, the Simcha Pole,
That was Ivdu et Hashem b'simcha, serve God with joy, motto of Congregation Beit Simcha, my new synagogue, by the way. Our guest this morning, Joseph Gittler, is the remarkable founder of an organization that feeds the hungry throughout the land of Israel by rescuing food that would otherwise go to waste. He is one of the recipients of the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. His story is both extraordinary and completely refreshing. It will make you feel good about humanity and about Jews and Israel. Meet Joseph Gittler, one of the 2018 Kohan Foundation Award winners, when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua Yaqui Tribe.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish art guests this morning. Joseph Gittler is the founder and, I guess, the force behind Leket Yisrael, Leket Israel, an organization that rescues healthy food and distributes it to the needy in Israel. He is a co-winner of the 2018 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good afternoon from over here in Israel.
Tell us, how did you come up with the idea for Leket? What was the motivating force when you started?
Well, leket is a biblical term which means gleaning, and we've modernized that for the economics of 2019, I should say. I was very concerned by the fact in Israel that we've made it. Israel's a success, what we all dreamed of, an economic success. But like so many countries, including the U.S. as the best example, many people, hardworking people, have simply been left behind as the economy has flowered, but along with that has come increased costs. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we waste food with abandon, as does every other wealthy Western country in the world. So to me, it was so difficult to put those two things together. So many people struggling to make ends meet who haven't been able to keep up with the modern economy, but because of the modern economy, we're able to waste like the best of them. And so what Leket simply does is says, food which is being wasted, for no good reason other than we made too much or prices are too low or other reasons, let's make sure it gets to those who need it. And so today we distribute food to about 200 charities throughout Israel who take care of the poor.
When you started this, you were operating out of the back of your Subaru, or as they call it in Israel, a Subaru. What does it feel like to watch the growth of this organization?
Pretty shocking, actually. It was started as a lark. I was in between some things at work. I got concerned by poverty reports I was hearing in Israel. And I said to myself, I know we're wasting so much food. Everyone talks about it. People go to hotels. I hear it from soldiers. I heard it at so many levels. It didn't seem that anyone was taking care of it, but I expected after a 3-month sabbatical to go back to work. So I was shocked when it just took off so quickly, and that's why I've stuck with it for the last 15 years. It's obviously very satisfying, very gratifying, certainly when we see the product of all our hard work, which is feeding hundreds of thousands of needy people every single week.
We will talk much more with Joseph Gittler and explore how Leket works and how those partnerships function when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills, is celebrating its first services, classes, and events this winter and spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is dedicated to creating a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. As a new progressive congregation in the foothills and northwest Tucson, Beit Simcha is open to all throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. We're thrilled to announce Beit Simcha's new home, 3001 East Skyline Boulevard on the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell, just across from Lawn Cantata. Services, classes, and events are held every week. Join us Friday night at Skyline and Campbell. Shabbat services will be at 6:30 p.m. We'll present the 15th anniversary Kohan Memorial Foundation Awards. Saturday morning at 9 a.m. we'll rededicate a Czech Holocaust Memorial Torah scroll. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, Adult Education Academy courses this week and always, and religious school, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675 or BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me in the newest Jewish congregation in southern Arizona and its exciting beginning. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or ekvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. T-O-O, Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows through the website. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our maven on Israel, Amir Eden, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Amir.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So elections are full swing in Israel. It doesn't take nearly
10 weeks.
As long. Ten
weeks from now, we're counting the days.
In America, it's like 4 years to elect again. But
larger country, yeah.
A bigger country, more tsaros, or maybe not. So there's now a new figure emerging really rapidly on the Israeli scene. Benny Gantz, former
chief of staff.
Chief of staff. Yes. There have been two chiefs of staff who became prime minister, I think Yitzhak Rabin and Barak, right?
Yes.
So there's some precedent.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about him. I don't think we know much about him here in America.
Right. So you mentioned two, late Yitzhak Rabin and Ehud Barak, and obviously you're correct. The thing with them is that they did not go directly to be a prime minister.
Right.
We know Yitzhak Rabin was, first the Israeli ambassador after
67. Defense minister, and then, all kinds of other things.
Right, correct. Right. I mean, before he became a prime minister. And then with Barak, same thing. You know, he joined the ministry. He was a minister before, you know, so a little bit of political experience. I don't know if it's fortune or unfortunately in Israel, you know, as a country that has a lot of security challenges. Someone who comes out from the military system brings with him, obviously, experience in leading a major organization that many of the Israeli citizens serve in. You know, so they've they're familiar with the system.
Almost all Israelis,
correct, but
not all of them lead the military.
Keep in mind, in America, when we say military, we mean actually army. And I mean, he led everything. So the Air Force and the Navy, led everything. So look, he's a man who served Israel, if I'm not mistaken, at least 38 years in the military. And he's from a small moshav next to Kiryat Malachi, which is our partnership
so region,
very
right?
In the proud south, of it, very proud of it.
Southwest of Israel, right?
Correct. And then and now he's running. Now the interesting thing, you know, in my bachelor's degree is in political science. You know, when his team prepared him for his first speech, which was last night, they made sure that he will target. On one hand, the center and a little bit left, which are kind of like in his pocket, as we say, and a little bit to the right, not really, really right. However, he did ask Bogi Yaalon, which is another former chief of staff,
Important Israeli military figure,
with really good background as head of Seiret Matkal, one of our leading special forces, and to join him, and gave him three spots. You know, for parliament members in the list,
right?
And Bogi is known as a right wing politician who served under the government of Benjamin Netanyahu,
right?
So basically, it's kind of like I'm right, but I'm not right, or I'm the New Europe right, or I'm center and right,
or I'm center and left, but I'm still also right, security. Right.
So basically, he spoke in length yesterday, and he spoke about peace. You know, and he spoke about security, and he spoke about what we will do, you know, within Israel and with our neighbors or former enemies, if we want to proceed towards peace.
Well, it's interesting to see an important figure, mm-hmm. it seems like it, you know, occupying the center, so definitely probably to the left of Netanyahu,
right.
But with all the security credentials you could possibly want.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then the other figure is Lapid, Yair Lapid.
Yeah.
You know, and what's nice with politicians, you know, they want to make the statements that will lead to what you think is reality, right? So if there's Benjamin Netanyahu running again, then they will say, I am the one who will replace him.
Netanyahu, if you vote
for someone else, you're just wasting your votes.
Right. Although it's fascinating because, of course, in the polls, Netanyahu is still leading.
Still leading.
All the indictment stuff and everything
else.
Correct. It will be very interesting. Thanks so much, Amir. We'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, as a father of three kids who are, well, a third of whom is about to go off for college, I'm acutely conscious of the costs of higher education in the United States. It's not that way everywhere. And for Jews who value education at such an extraordinarily high level, it's disturbing. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the Jewish love of education and the principle of giving your kids as much learning as humanly possible.
All right. I think that's a very worthwhile topic to address. And I think, as you noted correctly, higher education is increasingly an expensive luxury in the U.S. You have to be wealthy to be able to afford it, or you have to be so poor that your kid gets a lot of financial aid.
Or if your kid's a genius, you might be okay, but even that doesn't
solve it. Or a champion football player, whatever,
right.
The run-of-the-mill family, it's become increasingly a luxury available to fewer and fewer Americans. And one of the things that's interesting is how in many other countries that's just not true. Education is either free or much less expensive. I mean, I know Jewish people in the U.S., who sent their kids to Canada for university because it's about one quarter the price.
That's right, yeah, absolutely.
And not demonstrably worse, possibly even better.
Some of the universities certainly are. And, you know, of course, if you're in Israel or if your kid decides to stay in Israel for education, it's after the army service, but it's free.
Right. And in many countries, it's completely free. It's just part of the package of medical care, education, whatever. But that's not going to happen in this country anytime soon. And I think one of the things you raised was the Jewish commitment to learning. There is a rabbinic principle that you probably know better than I do, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. The study of Torah is as important as all the other mitzvahs put together. So I'd like to explore that idea with you for a second from several different points of view. First of all, I've always thought about the phrase, you know, the unexamined life is not worth living. Might be true, but I also feel like the unlived life isn't worth examining. So you can commit too much to studying and too little to actually living. But the Jewish commitment to education and the value of learning for its own sake is clearly established through the ages and across the world, across geography, across time, across cultures, across socioeconomic classes. And I think the first thing we have to explore is, what does the phrase Talmud Torah mean? Is it only the study of the five books of Moses, or is it something broader than that? And I think that's a subject that I'd like to explore with you in greater detail next week.
Sounds like a good plan. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
The 2018 15th Annual Kohan Memorial Foundation Awards will be presented at Congregation Beit Simcha here in Tucson on Friday night, February 8th at 6:30 p.m. Shabbat services. Everyone is welcome. Be honoring three different honorees represented by four people. Phyllis Fold, founder of the American Israel Gap Year Organization that helps young Jews go to Israel for a year-long experience they'll never forget. John Pregelman and Amy Israel Pregelman, founders of the organization Kavod that provides support for needy Holocaust survivors all over the U.S. And our remarkable guest this morning, Joseph Gittler, creator of Leket Yisrael, which provides food for the hungry throughout the land of Israel. The awards are named after Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan, my grandparents, by the way, who worked always for the good of Klal Yisrael, the entire peoplehood of Israel, throughout their lives. Be an amazing evening. Join us this Friday night, 6:30 p.m. at Congregation Beit Simcha at the corner of Skyline and Campbell in the Catalina foothills. Saturday morning, we'll rededicate a Czech Torah scroll saved from the Holocaust at 9 a.m. services. Don't miss this great Shabbat. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Sadie goes to see her rabbi and complains about terrible headaches. She whines, she cries, she talks about her awful life for 2 solid hours. All of a sudden, Sadie looks up, overjoyed. Rabbi, your holy presence has cured me. My headache is gone. The rabbi replies, no, Sadie, it's not gone. I have it now. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. In a mitzvah at the heart of Jewish religious experience, our portion of Truma this week, God commands the Israelites, Asu li mikdash v'shachanti betocham, make me a sanctuary, and I will dwell among you. With this statement, the book of Exodus moves from practical laws to ritual ones. The plans for the creation of the tabernacle in the wilderness, first site of national worship, and the directions for building the Ark of the Covenant are explained in detail. In order to create a new central shrine for prayer, the place which God's presence will actually inhabit, Moses calls on the people of Israel to donate materials from the best of what they have, what comes to be called a truma offering. And a remarkable thing happens. When people are asked to donate gifts to build the holy structures needed to worship God, they come forward immediately and give much more than is required. Moses actually has to ask the Israelites to stop bringing so much gold and silver and so many precious fabrics. This marks the first and perhaps only time in history when a temple building campaign brought in more than was asked for or required. May it happen again sometime soon. Or perhaps it already happened here. I must admit, about 6 weeks ago, our new congregation, Beit Simcha, moved into an essentially empty building. It's very beautiful, but we had nothing to put in it besides an ark, a Torah, and a few bookcases. I did what God had Moses do in our Torah portion. I asked people to make donations, and similarly, whatever items I asked for, people donated. It has been an amazing experience. Everything from refrigerators to pianos to desks to cabinets to printers to Torah commentaries has been donated. We no longer need anything material. Our own sanctuary is filled with the practical and beautiful objects necessary to running services, classes, and doing sacred music. And so, naturally, it's becoming filled with Jews singing, studying, praying, and doing the work of justice in the world. In any case, the word for this experience is truma, a freewill offering, a gift to God out of the goodness of the heart. This generous freewill offering is a powerful thing indeed, for when it is constructed, the tabernacle in the wilderness, built from free generosity, immediately fills with God's presence. When we give freely of ourselves to our temples today, in time, love, care, funds, we seek to recreate that freewill offering, the full gift of heart and hand of our ancestors in Moses' time. And when we succeed in doing so, we too bring God's presence and love into our lives. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Joseph Gittler, will explain how the organization he founded, Leket, almost literally gleans the excess food from Israeli celebrations and fields and uses it to feed the hungry in the Holy Land. Find out how they do it and why he deserves the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In an amazing, and I hope believable, story this week, a small team of Israeli scientists believe they might have found the first true cure for cancer. On the surface, it looks like a tremendous breakthrough. But a significant caveat must be added. It is very early in the medical discovery process, and no human trials have yet been held for this new medication. According to some reports, about 96% of all cancer drugs that reach the human trial stage fail. So, although the report you're going to hear of a small Israeli startup medical firm finding the elusive cure for cancer is too good to skip, we must add that here on Too Jewish we report this story, but have to add that it seems perhaps too good to be true, at least yet. Dan Aridor last week said of a new treatment being developed by his company Accelerated Evolution Biotechnologies Ltd., AEBI, founded in 2000 in the tech incubator at the Weizmann Science Park, he said, "We believe we will offer in a year's time a complete cure for cancer." The Israeli company has developed something called the SOAP platform. "Our cancer cure will be effective from day one," Aridor said. "It will last a duration of a few weeks and will have no or minimal side effects at a much lower cost than most other treatments on the market. Our solution will be both generic and personal." Well, this sounds fantastic considering that an estimated 18 million new cancer cases are diagnosed worldwide every year, according to the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Every sixth death in the world is because of cancer, making it the second leading cause of death behind only cardiovascular disease. And the search for a cure for cancer has been going on for over a century. Aridor, the chairman of the board of AEBI, and the CEO, Dr. Ilan Morad, say their treatment, which they call Mutato, multi-target toxin, is on the scale of a cancer antibiotic, a kind of disruption technology. The potentially game-changing anti-cancer drug involves the introduction of DNA coding for a protein, like an antibody, into a bacteriophage, a virus that infects bacteria. That protein is then displayed on the surface of the phage, kind of like a searchlight. Researchers could then use these protein-displaying phages to screen for reactions with other proteins, DNA sequences, and small molecules. In 2018, a team of scientists won the Nobel Prize for their work on phage display and the directed evolution of new proteins, in particular the production of antibody therapeutics. AEBi, this Israeli company, is doing something similar with peptides, compounds of two or more amino acids linked. According to Morad, peptides have several advantages over antibodies. They are smaller, cheaper, easier to produce, and to regulate. When the company first started, Morad said, we were doing what everybody else was doing, trying to discover individual novel peptides for specific cancers. But shortly thereafter, Morad and his colleague, Dr. Hanan Yitzhaki, decided they wanted to do something bigger. To get started, they had to identify why other cancer-killing drugs and treatments don't work or eventually fail. Most anti-cancer drugs attack a specific target on or in the cancer cell. Inhibiting the target usually affects a physiological pathway that promotes cancer. Mutations in the targets or their pathways can make the targets irrelevant to the cancer nature of the cell. That is, the drug attacking it is then rendered ineffective. In contrast, this Mutato, M-U-T-A-T-O, uses a combination of several cancer-targeting peptides for each cancer cell at the same time, combined with a strong toxin that kills cancer cells specifically. By using three targeting peptides, bear with me, on the same structure with the strong toxin, we made sure, says Morad, that the treatment will not be affected by mutations. That's the great difficulty with cancer cells. They mutate in such a way that receptors are dropped by the cancer. The probability of having multiple mutations that would modify all the targeted receptors simultaneously decreases dramatically with the number of targets used. Instead of attacking receptors one at a time, we attack them three at a time. Not even cancer can mutate three receptors at the same time. Many cancer cells also activate detoxification mechanisms when stressed by anti-cancer drugs. The cells pump out the drugs or break them down so they don't work. But detoxification takes time. When the toxin is strong, it has a high probability of killing the cancer cell before it can detoxify. Cancer is very difficult to fight. Many anti-cancer treatments aim at fast-growing cells, but cancer stem cells grow more slowly and can escape these treatments. Then, when the treatment's over, they generate cancer again. That's why it comes back. If it does not completely annihilate the cancer, the remaining cells start to get mutations again. The cancer comes back, but this time it's drug resistant, said Morad. The multi-target attack used by this new company is designed to ensure that cancer stem cells are destroyed too. And finally, cancer tumors erect shields that create access problems for large molecules like antibodies. This Mutato acts like an octopus sneaking into places where other large molecules can't reach. Morad said the peptide parts of it are very small and lack a rigid structure. That makes the whole molecule non-immunogenic in most cases. It would enable repeated administration of the drug. Morad said their discovery could also reduce the sickening side effects of most cancer treatments, which stem from drug treatments interacting with the wrong or additional targets, or the correct targets, but on non-cancerous cells. Mutato has aspects that allow it to identify the real cancer cells. It makes a great difference between the two kinds of cells and decreases the side effects dramatically. Morad also equated the concept of Mutato to the triple drug cocktail that has helped change AIDS from being an automatic death sentence to a chronic but manageable disease. We used to give AIDS patients several drugs, but we'd administer them one at a time. During the course of treatment, the virus mutated, the AIDS started attacking again. Only when patients started using a cocktail were they able to stop the disease. People with AIDS now are HIV carriers, but if taking the drug cocktail, they are no longer sick or dying. According to the company, the Mutato cancer treatment will eventually be personalized. Each patient will be provided a piece of his biopsy to the lab, which would then analyze it to know which receptors are overexpressed. The individual will then be administered exactly the cocktail needed to cure his disease. However, unlike in the case of AIDS, where patients must take the cocktail throughout their lives, in the case of this cancer treatment, the cells would be killed. The patient likely could stop treatment after only a few weeks. The company is now writing patents on specific peptides it's using. Morad said that so far the company has concluded its first exploratory mice experiment, which inhibited human cancer cell growth and had no effect at all on healthy mice cells. In addition, it's tried several in vitro trials. AEBI is about to begin a round of clinical trials that will take a few years, would make the treatment available in specific cases. Aridor insists our results are consistent and repeatable. Look, it's too early to know if this really is the long, elusive cure for cancer. The U.S. National Cancer Act goes back to 1971, while the American Cancer Society was founded in 1913. While the new announcement appears very promising, we will have to wait for at least a few years to see if it actually works still. If anyone can cure cancer, you would think it would be some innovative Jewish doctors and an Israeli startup company. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Joseph Gittler is the founder of Leket, the organization that rescues food that would otherwise go to waste and provides it to organizations that help feed the hungry throughout Israel. He is a co-winner of the 2018 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. We're delighted to have him here. So tell us about when you started this process. You went around to what, supermarkets, restaurants that had leftover food. How did you begin it? And then tell us how the partnerships kind of evolved and how they function today.
So actually the first thing I did, which today I consider our most important partnerships, is to visit charities around Israel. I was trying to get a pulse on if there was something missing besides just money, which every charity asks for.
Always missing money, right?
I always say I'm looking for a charity. Any charity that says they don't need money, send them my way.
So it was kind of quiet for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, no one ever answers that one. So I visited probably in the beginning of 2003 about 50 charities, and many of them commented, we're so busy raising money to buy food, we're sometimes neglecting our true mission. An after-school club for kids, a battered women's shelter, a homeless shelter, food is just part of their mission. It's a hook. It's a necessity. But the mission is really rehabilitation, safety, education, etc. And so when I heard that, I said, well, we live in a land of abundance, Eretz Zavat Chalav U'Dvash, the land of milk and honey, no shortage of food. Everyone who comes here comments on the incredible abundance wherever you are, from hotels to restaurants to supermarkets. And so what I actually did at the time is I actually flew to Toronto, where my wife is from originally. I spent a week with Second Harvest Canada, which is a leading food rescue, food bank organization in Canada, and learned from them. And then I came back with a head of steam to Israel, and I started to call up catering firms. And the questions I asked were as follows. Do you have leftover food? Yes. What do you do with it? We feed our staff, we feed our guests, and whatever's left, we throw away. And then the question I didn't know the answer to, which was, will you give me this food? Now, I was just some guy, Anglo guy in Ranana, poor Hebrew at the time, which helped me. I'm 100% certain that helped because I didn't feel threatening to them. They didn't think I was someone trying to steal their food. No one asked me about tax deductions. No one asked me about legal liability if the food should go bad. Very American type of lawyerly questions. They said, when can you start? And so that was it. Once I heard this message from the catering community, and then started picking up in my Subaru extra food on my own for about 2 months, and I saw the power and the quality and the joy on the NGO, our agency partners who are getting the food, I realized very quickly what I thought was just going to be a little lark, get something off the ground, that this was something I had an obligation to try to build as much as I could.
So it's 15 years later. You have fed, do you know how many people you've fed? It's an interesting question.
It's a great question. No one's ever asked it to me like that. We, currently today, we're working with 210 NGOs throughout Israel, Jewish and non-Jewish alike. And those 210 agencies feed around 200,000 people. We don't take care of all their needs, but we're a very significant portion of the food they provide to their people. So many, many people have been fed by Leket. I'm comfortable saying that.
When you collect the food, and first of all, you know, it used to be, it started as just you. Obviously, there's a number of people now that work with Leket, that work for Leket, collecting the food. You have trucks. Is it all, you know, big professional trucks? How do you do things?
So it's really a mix. We have our own fleet of about 15 refrigerated trucks of various sizes, up to 20-ton trucks. We have tens of thousands of volunteers every year who participate either in collecting food at night from catering halls, working in our warehouse, repackaging fruits and vegetables for delivery, and the project that most people know us for, which is actually gleaning in the fields, when we have opportunities to work with farmers who, for various economic reasons, are not collecting what they've worked so hard. It's hard to believe.
Boy, that is a strange one. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Well, and it's no different, again, anywhere else in the world, but sure. You could, let's think of the term bumper crop. So I always ask people, when you hear the term bumper crop, Rabbi, good or bad?
Good. You think great.
So the answer is depends. If you're a consumer, usually good. A lot of stuff's going to come on the market, and prices are going to go down. Because when one farmer has a bumper crop, probably everyone did from the same region, certainly in Israel. U.S. is a different country. U.S. is so big. You know, the orange crop in California could be successful, while in Florida it's unsuccessful. But when strawberry farmers in Israel have a great year, everyone has a great year, and then prices start to drop. At a certain point, farmers may decide, I can't make any money, even after all my hard work and investment. I'm not going to bother picking it. That's when Leket comes into the picture with our volunteers and our own team of paid pickers. Part of our staff, a key part of our staff, is actually paid pickers. To the tune, in 2018, we distributed about 40 million pounds of fruits and vegetables that was rescued because of market price, because of acts of God, because of what's called today ugly fruits and vegetables, order cancellations, currency fluctuations. It's really, I always say, I'm waiting for a Harvard Business Review article about our work, but I haven't gotten there yet.
It's fascinating. What organizations, can you just give example of a few, the more prominent ones, do you provide food to?
Okay, so one is called Ezer Mitzion, as an example, which is a very large organization doing many, many different things, and one of them is feeding people throughout the country, a wonderful partner of ours. Over the last few years, we've made incredibly strong partnership with Kol El Chabad, which is the official humanitarian organization for Lubavitch in Israel. It's 250 years old, started by the first Rebbe. We work very closely. Some people might know an organization called La Sova, which is a wonderful partner of ours in Tel Aviv. One of the things they do really beautifully that we're proud of helping provide the food for is they're the largest provider of food to the refugee community, which there are tens of thousands of African refugees living in South Tel Aviv. And we take a lot of pride in helping them. And certainly where you're recording from, the refugee issue is a big one.
Yeah, of course.
Today in the United States.
Right.
I've seen Africans, of course, in South Tel Aviv, Jaffa area, and, you know, you don't, it doesn't register that, of course, they're probably on the very lowest margin of society right now. When you provide the food, you know, I guess it's sort of probably a naive question. You're rescuing food that's, somebody's made too much. There's a large crop of something that they can't use or they don't want to sell because the prices are too low. It's more expensive to harvest it than it is to sell it, than they'll get in selling it. How long does this food last? You know, time with food is always of the essence, but I would think particularly so in your case.
So we like to call ourselves the FedEx of food rescue. That's a nice shout out for FedEx. Cooked food is distributed only to organizations where people eat on the spot. We don't let it take another journey because of the risks involved.
Right.
That food is either delivered directly at night by volunteers. It may be chilled overnight and then delivered the next day by our trucks. Much food of the cooked food that's collected during the day from the IDF, hotels, and corporate cafeterias goes directly hot to the agencies where kids may be eating it in a high school after school program for lunch at 2 p.m. So we're very, very careful with that. Fruits and vegetables, of course, it depends. Potatoes, carrots, beets, kind of hard, you know, vegetables that we get often have long shelf lives. In fact, we just moved warehouses to a far bigger facility because we were turning down donations in 2018 because we could not afford the cost of the outsourced refrigeration, so we needed a bigger facility. So stuff like that, actually now we'll be able to be much more strategic with it and give it out more in dribs and drabs instead of, you know, hoisting 20 tons of carrots on some unsuspecting organization. We always say in Israel, when you see people around the street who are orange, it means Leket got a big delivery of carrots. And then, you know, stuff that needs to move quickly, we move it quickly. Nothing stays in place too long. Oh, we don't even like to call our facility a warehouse. We like to call it a distribution center. Our new facility can hold, at any one time, over 4 million pounds of fruits and vegetables.
Wow.
So we have a lot of work cut out for us, especially since we estimate we are collecting less than 10% of what's rescuable in Israel, and we have very little, if not any, competition.
A law was passed last month promoting food donations. Tell us how that came about and how that influences your work.
So many, many years of, literally 10 years of lobbying, talking, meeting, pleading to pass what in America is known as a Good Samaritan law. There are federal, state, and local laws all over the U.S. that protect food donors from legal liability as long as they're not reckless. We've wanted a law like this for a long time, even though we've been pretty successful in getting the riskier food donors to give us food. But we saw over the years there were certain multinationals, especially in the hotel industry, who just weren't donating their food because what they had coming from head office in other countries was very, very negative. The impact has been swift. Many, many, many new opportunities of food collections from places that we found inaccessible in the past. An absolutely incredible PR for Leket, especially in the Israeli press, where the press really was excited by the accomplishment of getting a law passed, which really was a bit of long-term discussions, especially with the Justice Ministry. The Health Ministry was comfortable, Justice Ministry less so, but after many years of negotiations, we finally convinced them to give their sign-off. And then the Knesset came along.
Why did the Justice Ministry have trouble agreeing to it?
They don't like to give blanket protections. It just scares them, and I can understand that. The fact that we showed that the U.S., Canada have laws like this, we like to think whatever's good in those countries is good in Israel. It's not always the case, and just because our most important partner, the U.S., has a law doesn't mean that they're going to pass it immediately, but we're there. And it's made a big difference for Leket already.
How can people help Leket do what it does?
Okay, so a number of ways. First of all, if you're coming to Israel, please get in touch with us, whether you're an individual, a family, a group, a synagogue group, a family group, a birthright group, anything you can think of. We need volunteers. We need volunteers picking in the fields. We need volunteers working in our warehouse. We had over 50,000 volunteers last year, but we need more, literally almost every day of the week, Sunday to Thursday. We don't do Saturdays. We try not to do Fridays to give our staff a break. We, of course, we're not one of those organizations that says we don't need money. We need money. We're a big organization. Our budget's already over $15 million a year. But with $15 million, in 2019, we expect to distribute somewhere between $60 to $70 million worth of food.
Incredible.
So we're good for the environment, mass volunteerism, good leverage for people who like that, and of course, we're feeding hundreds of thousands of needy Israelis. Many opportunities to help us, and you can email me if you need more information. I'm at joseph@leket.org. Our website is www.leket.org. And certainly, children who are celebrating bar and bat mitzvahs, consider us if you're having a tzedakah or tikkun olam project.
It's a great program. And by the way, it's an excellent website. I want to congratulate Joseph Gittler on being a recipient, a co-recipient of the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. There'll be an award ceremony February 8th here in Tucson, Arizona, if you're in the neighborhood. Thank you so much, and continued success and growth with Leket.
Thank you for this wonderful opportunity and for the award, and I look forward to meeting you and the rest of the Tucson community in February.
Thanks so much. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be the delightful Matt Green, the subject of the documentary film The World Before Your Feet, a young Jewish guy who has walked every street in New York City over the past 8 years. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Top 10 Jewish radio show in America. My friends, also join us this Friday night at Congregation Beit Simcha for the Kohan Memorial Foundation Awards at 6:30 p.m. It'll be an extraordinary night, and Saturday morning at 9 a.m. when we dedicate a Czech memorial scroll. Our playout this morning is a beautiful song from the Israeli singers Eliana Tidhar and Lee Biron called Biladecha, Without You. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a fun Super Bowl Sunday, and a week we pray of peace.
בלעדייך יש לי חדר ריק בבית שבלב וזה לא סתם שהם אומרים באהבה יש גם כאב אבל היו לנו ימים שרק פיזרנו חיוכים גם בלי סיבה גם בלי סיבה
בלעדיך יש לי מילים יתומות ממנגינות לילות שלמים אני ערה סופרת כבשים בכמויות כשחולמת חלומות אתה שחקן ראשי בכל הצגות בכל הצגות רוצה שתחבק חזק ולעולם לא תעזוב אתה גילית לי מחדש מה זה לאהוב ואין סיכוי שוותר גם אם אנחנו לא בטוב כי בלעדיך אהובי אני סתם גל אבוד שלא יחזור יותר לחוף אתה גילית לי מחדש מה זה לאהוב ואין סיכוי שוותר גם אם אנחנו לא בטוב כי בלעדיך אהובי אני סתם גל אבוד שלא יחזור יותר לחוף בלעדיך זה תמיד מרגיש כמו משהו שחסר זוכר אמרת לי אנחנו לעולם לא נשבר
אז אני לא רוצה יותר לקום ליום חדש.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.